All right, so welcome to an External Insider number 193, which makes it sound like we've actually done 192 episodes, but that's not true. We've just done that many magazines. This is the May 2010 issue, and it's entertainment. All right, Kyle, so how are you doing?
I can't complain. I'm doing pretty well. It's only 9 o'clock here at the East Coast. It's still pretty early for me. How about you?
It's already tomorrow here, and I got to tell you, so far the day's looking pretty dark. Not a whole lot of sunlight yet at midnight, but you know it's going pretty good. I'm going on. This is now my third day with a horrible, painful headache. So that part's not so great. Not happy about that at all, to be quite honest. We waited this late hoping that my headache would go away, and it didn't. So we're doing it anyway. We're pushing through.
It's perseverance.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And basically, we had to get this done tonight, and it's still technically tonight on your end. So that's what we're going to tell Jill, the editor, that we did it today.
There's no minute like the last minute.
Yes, exactly. So anyway, as far as the Linux world goes, this is a fun issue. And it's fun by design because this is the entertainment issue. It's entertaining. can you tell my head hurts? I'm not so quick with the wit this time. So you're in charge of corny jokes this episode.
We're in trouble then. All right.
Well, I get the first article, so we'll start with the first article, all right? And this is by Dave Phillips, and it's interviewing the LORC group, all right? The Linux Laptop Orchestra. Now, this is spelled with a number, and I'm a big fan of names spelled with numbers, you know, because my online username, Sean Powers, has a zero. This is L20RK, which is pronounced LORC. And basically, it's a group of musicians that get together with their laptops and connect to a super cool-looking speaker ball thing.
Speaker ball is pretty sweet.
And honestly, it is. It's hard to get past that. And it looks like right out of Star Wars, the little ball that trains Luke, you know, with his lightsaber. So, you know, if nothing else, you got to look at the cool speaker ball thing. But they can, and basically, they get together, use their Linux laptops, and create music. Because that's what they are. They're a musical group.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty cool because it sounds like that there's a – I wasn't aware of this. I haven't gone to a lot of laptop orchestral concerts. But apparently it's a somewhat common thing where there's a couple different groups out there right now that are using laptops and performing some sort of orchestral number. But I guess this is the first one that uses strictly Linux machines.
Right. Right, and they all have cool names like Splork and Plork and Bjork and no, that's a singer, Bjork.
But this is the only one with a silent number two in it. So,
right, and that may be the only silent number two. Right to scat jokes. I don't know. I don't know if we're going to be allowed to do issue number 193.
I know. Yeah. I think. Yeah. The silent. That would be a myth.
The silent number two. Although you know. Yeah. Yeah. Let's push past.
Yeah. Speaking of myths, the article that I'm talking about.
Oh,
up,
dude!
Comparing Myth TV, which is not a myth, with Xbox Media Center (XBMC). Michael J. Hamill wrote that, and basically, it's a true comparison. It's not sort of a head-to-head which one wins article. Basically, what this article goes into is the fact that both of them are great pieces of software that you can use under Linux to play different types of media on your system, but they each serve slightly different purposes. So, for instance, Myth TV is more focused on recording television, record and then playing it back. You can even record and then play back live. You can do TiVo-like recording of ahead of time and then playing it back when you have time later. It can also be a media front end where you can play videos and music and other things on your television or on a computer. And then talks about that. And then the article goes into Xbox Media Center, which I personally use a lot. As my main media center, I have a spare machine that's hooked up directly to my TV running it, and talks about how that's used more strictly to, for video playback. There's no real live TV recording with Xbox Media Center, but really nice slick interface on both of them, pretty easy to use, and basically just compares both of them and where they fit in with each other. So, for instance, Myth TV has both a front end and a back end. In the back end, Myth TV server can record. You can have them both running on the same system. And the front end can either be running Myth TV or apparently Xbox Media Center. This is something I didn't know that I learned in the article, has a plugin that allows you to hook directly into Myth TV.
I was going to say, right, and that's the key thing, too. Myth TV is largely for recording TV, and then you can watch it on several different front-end computers, you know, the same recording. And that's, I think that's really one of the strengths of Myth TV. Along with it has just a ton of plugins, you know, that you can do all sorts of things from ripping DVDs to washing your dishes. I mean, anything you want to do, there's basically a plugin for Myth TV to do that. I also use Xbox Media Center, and one of the cool, you know, our house burned down, and we have to replace all of our media stuff.
Did you say one of the cool? I thought you were about to say one of the cool things. Our house burned down.
Well, you know, hey, I got to look for the positive, right? One of the cool parts of having your house burned down is that you have to replace all of your stuff, right? So we're looking at replacing our things, and we had a popcorn hour media player before, and I think that I'm going to be looking at getting an Xbox Media Center. And what I want to look at, the Acer Revo Net Top machine, it has like a you can install Xbox Media Center on it. It has the NVIDIA Ion video adapter, and so you get like 1080p with, you know, like no electricity usage. It's pretty sweet. And again, XBMC works out of the box on it really great. It's neat to see some small set-top devices that you can use on with these as well. And you can almost make a front end out of anything anymore. I don't know, what is your computer, the front end that you have in your living room? How big is your computer?
It's one of those slimline desktop PCs, actually. I went to a local Fry's and got a really good deal on just a – it's some sort of dual-core Athlon or something like that. It was really cheap and reasonably small computer, but the key was that it had one of those NVIDIA cards that had the hardware acceleration of, you know, MKV files and that sort of thing. So,
right, awesome. That's kind of that same thing I'm talking. Does it have HDMI?
It does, actually. It has it built into the card, and actually with Linux, I set it up. It only took me, you know, a couple hours to get everything just exactly how I wanted it, where it has one HDMI cable coming out, and audio and video go out that cable and straight into a television, and it works great. In fact, a buddy of mine,
cool.
I used to use Xbox Media Center on an old Xbox, and I still had the remote control and everything that came with that. And a buddy of mine was able to hack the little remote module that plugs into the Xbox. It's basically using USB, and he just hooked it up to a USB port, plugged it into the computer, and now I can use the same old Xbox remote with it.
Nice. My old Xbox remote had all the buttons chewed off by ferrets, but that's another story for another time. But now to watch video, again, Myth TV will record stuff, but with XBMC, it's generally pre-recorded or, you know, ripped content. And here's my segue into my next article, where we talk about Handbrake. Now, Anthony Dean writes up this article on Handbrake, and if you're not familiar with it, it's a DVD ripping program. It seems like a simple thing, but if you've ever tried to rip DVDs, it can be a complicated thing, requiring like a bunch of different software packages, and then when you add encryption to the mix, that always gets complicated, and aspect ratios, and file formats, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Handbrake really, really does take all the headaches out. And I've used it with Windows, with Mac OS X, and with Linux. And I have to say, under Linux, it's really slick because if you install the libdvd CSS package, like I think that's in the Ubuntu restricted extras if you're an Ubuntu user. But if you install that, it'll decrypt DVDs. Whereas in the other operating systems, that's a little bit tough because Handbrake doesn't do decryption by default. And so it uses like VLC on Windows and Mac and et cetera, et cetera. But Linux, it works really great. And it takes a lot of the confusing calculations and all that kind of stuff out of it. So, you know, Anthony gives us a really good look at Handbrake, how it works, why you'd want to use it. And it's a great way to get media from DVDs onto your computer to watch on things like XBMC over a network. And your kids can't scratch packets, but they can scratch DVDs. So,
you know, I think that's one of the, like, especially if you have kids or just the convenience, if you have a big DVD library, I guess at some point we'll all have just digital video. There won't be any discs or media associated with it. But until then, you know, you have this giant stack of DVDs, and it's a big pain to have to get up when you want to watch one movie, then you start watching it, and you're like, you know, I really don't think I want to watch this. I want to watch something else. And having them all at your fingertips, without having to get up, it's really handy.
It is nice. Now, can I take a quick segue away from your last article?
Sure.
Just to talk about, if you remember when we were at Scale, digital media is huge because you actually, on your Nokia N900, which I think this is the issue that your review's in.
Right,
correct?
Right.
Okay, you actually SSH'd or SCP'd a movie file from your house in Northern California to the hotel room in Southern California so that we could watch a movie playing on your N900 exported to the television in the hotel room, which was kind of cool, but an example of why digital media is really nice to have.
Yeah, I mean, it would have taken a little bit more time and a little bit more expense to get my DVD of the same movie shipped over here. So
it's true. And, you know, I mean, even with, you know, cell phone bandwidth, I think it took a couple hours, whereas, I mean, even FedEx next day early AM won't get it there quite that quickly.
Right.
And since, you know, Netflix doesn't work with streaming media on Linux, we didn't have that option. So anyway, go ahead on your last article, which is not about video.
No, so a lot of these, some of these articles are about video, and this one is comparing five music players. Bruce Byfield wrote this, and basically the first article I talked about just sort of talks about Myth TV and Xbox Media Center in sort of a compare and contrast, but it's not really a rating or review of them. This article actually takes five media players head-to-head and compares them on a lot of different aspects, like usability and a lot of other features, and then actually rates winners and losers. So the five media players he goes over are Amarok, Banshee, Xale, Rhythmbox, and Songbird. And he basically bases them on default Debian Unstable release and compares them on a lot of different aspects, such as just the interface and usability. Talks about things like whether they can edit meta tags, how they handle playlists. And I found, I agree with a lot of what he says here, although I have to admit I'm more of an XMMS kind of guy myself. But when I did veer off of XMMS for a little while, I did use Amarok, and Amarok seems to be the winner in most of these categories here. He seems to really enjoy Amarok.
You know, I hear that a lot too, and I kind of say, if there's a media player that I really want to be awesome, it's Songbird. You know, I mean, based on the Mozilla toolkit or however, I'm not a programmer, but, you know, the Mozilla package or whatever, Songbird, I want that to be so awesome. But it doesn't get great reviews usually.
Yeah, it's really weird because, I mean, I tried that at an Ubuntu conference for the first time about a year back or so, and I thought it was really cool, especially because it's multi-platform. Like, the problem with most of these is you can talk about how great any of them are and how much you like them, but they're not all cross-platform. So if you have some friends on a Windows machine or a Mac or something, it's hard to get them, you know, interested in these players. But Songbird's, you know, cross-platform for all of them, so...
Yeah, I hope that one gets better. Not against any of the other programs. It's just like you said, cross platform, and I just would like that one to be awesome. I just want to oust iTunes. Basically, that's one of my goals in life.
Yeah, I mean, it would just be great, just like with a lot of other open source software, for people who want to make the plunge into Linux. The more of their software that runs on both their current platform and Linux, the easier it is to make the transition. So, you know, if they're already using iTunes and they're stuck on iTunes, it makes it that much more difficult when they move over and say, hey, what are all these new programs? I have no idea what they do.
Exactly. I agree. And you know what? Can we move on to the mailbag? Because there's an issue here, and I get to be Darth Vader when I read this, and that's just fun. I think that's entertaining for the entertainment issue.
Let's go right to it.
So, okay. This is from Luke. Now, I don't know Luke's last name, so I assume that it's my son, Luke. So, Luke.
I'm sorry, but, but that's not true. That's impossible.
Don't make me cut off your hand. Now, I don't think I can read the whole thing as Darth Vader, so you'll just have to pretend. Legally using Linux. Now, the company I work for takes legal compliance with licenses seriously. This presents a difficulty when using free Linux distros because the clearest statement they seem to make, if you're lucky, is that the licenses of the software in the distro are compatible. Since distros typically contain thousands of packages, each with its own license, for a company to check that it has to comply with the terms of each, a simple example that no package says it may be used for commercial purposes, it's quite expensive. It could take a legal department weeks. He goes on to talk about Red Hat licensing looking tricky and stuff, but he says, I just use Red Hat as an example because you would think a commercial distro would have the clearest statement of the user's legal obligations, but even their licenses would require a while to check properly. Did I mention the Macromedia links to a further set of dozens of licenses for other Adobe software that may be relevant? It just seems like a crazy situation. Surely it makes sense for the legal position of each distro to clearly set out and be summarized for companies who want to use it in good faith. Instead, it seems every user is expected to duplicate the efforts of checking for a typical problematic restrictions, such as not for commercial use, etc. So, what's a user to do? He says he's writing to bring the matter to the community's attention in the hope that the situation is not really as impossible as it seems.
Yeah, that's a really tricky one because software licensing is difficult enough in the proprietary realm, you know, with those giant documents that you click through every single time you run anything and, you know, typically don't read. And then in Linux, you know, even if we have the GPL on most things, there's a couple different versions of GPL that are mostly compatible. There's, you know, BSD licenses and LGPL and 5 million other open source licenses too, not to mention, like he says, the Adobe one. So it's, I'm not, you know, as far as I go, I'm not exactly sure what to recommend other than if he's working for a bunch of lawyers to help get them to give us some help there.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, to be fair, if you are using a proprietary software license or software, whoa, you got some cool sounds coming from your side there.
No, that was not my stomach. That was actually a truck. But...
Oh, okay. You ate a truck. Okay, I was just going to say that even if you use a proprietary system like Windows, there's a lot of licensing issues with the software. But he's right that just the base Linux install has thousands of packages, and many of them have licenses that are, you know, this one's a BSD license, this one is, you know, the Mozilla license, this one is that. It does get complicated. I think, sadly, a lot of companies just don't care. I don't know if that's sad or not, but that's you know what a lot of companies I think just take for granted that licensing is fine in their Windows stuff, but you know Linux people tend to be more adamant about licensing for other reasons. So I think that we get more attention that way. I don't know. It is a tough situation though.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure. I definitely don't have a definitive answer myself. But I mean, maybe this is the kind of thing that the EFF or someone like that could tackle at some point, some sort of way to consolidate these things.
That's a good idea. Yeah, that's true. And then, you know, they could roll their own distro and call it Liga Linux.
Ligix?
I don't know.
A couple silent numbers in there.
Ligix, yes. With silent number twos. So, yeah, I don't know. I guess we don't have a great answer other than it's a good point. It's a really good point. So anyway, anything else before we finish off this month? I apologize for my lack of wit and humor, and we resorted to number two comedy.
And a voice. So, I mean, it was worth it for me just for the Vader voice. So.
Yeah, it wasn't a great Vader voice. Vader voice, nice. But, yeah, it is what it is. So anyway... thank you for listening to Linux Journal Insider for the May 2010 issue. Make sure to pick up a copy on newsstands in mid-April. Now, subscribers, if you're listening to this, you probably already have a copy in your hands, or it's on the way. We hope you enjoy. Next month, we'll be talking about distributions, specifically Linux distributions. So make sure you tune in again, and don't forget to visit us online at www.linuxjournal.com. See you next month.
See ya.